Well, I have a theoretical situation for Nate, who started Cracking Aces and has been basically the force behind it and the face, with other people helping, naturally. But sure. What would you do if Owen went on like a public forum, like the Dave Portnoy show, and basically say that he was responsible for everything Cracking Aces was, is, and forever will be?
One, I don't think Owen would do that. God bless Owen. I just don't think he would do that. Two, I think I would probably throw him out the third floor window.
Yeah, be interesting.
Yeah.
Be interesting.
Why do you ask?
I don't know. Just a hypothetical.
Is there something on the Dave Portnoy show this week we should listen up for?
Nah.
No?
Nah. It's all conjecture and lies and...
I'm going to have to listen to this.
When's that drop?
Tonight.
Tonight. So, same time as this show. So...
Yeah. Big competition there.
Shit. Yeah, it's like the old Monday Night Wars.
Yeah.
You don't seem thrilled.
I'm not thrilled that it devolved into exactly what I didn't want it to be, which was a shouting match, which got the facts lost in the sauce.
Is it awkward out there now?
No.
It has to be.
No. I just feel bad for the soldiers we lost.
Who did we lose? Game time soldiers.
Yeah, people who, you know, get fired for what I think is not... For essentially doing their jobs, what I think, being mismanaged. But
so basically what happened is people who were hired more or less to work on Game Time were then fired for working on Game Time.
Yeah. Weird. It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not involved, so.
Dave Portnoy Show.
Dave Portnoy Show.
How long were you on it for?
A while, like 20 minutes.
Damn.
I got red. I got beat red. I was fine.
I saw the picture. You didn't look happy.
I was not happy.
You also, it was like the Trista thing. You won't, I don't like the phrase throw someone under the bus, but you won't protect yourself. You won't.
Oh, yeah. I will run myself over with the bus.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't have to throw other people under the bus, but you also, you won't even drive the bus.
No, I will put an ice block under the brake of the bus.
It's interesting.
Put it on and then at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah, it's interesting how you do that.
Yeah. I am my own worst enemy. I'm well aware of that.
Vince? Walking cliche.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Onward and upward.
It is what? It's November 30th. This happens about once or twice a year with you.
Yeah.
You bring up like all your numbers and graphs and charts.
Yeah.
You pull out the pie graphs. You do.
Y'all both been here so damn long. It's like a cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he like becomes like a like PowerPoint like master, and he starts showing like algorithms and you know the graphs. About,
yeah, I become, who's the guy in The Big Short?
Oh, fuck. What's his name?
Christian Bale.
Yeah, God. I love that guy. Remember at the end of the movie, like, he's now going to short water, and everybody's like, whoa! And then nothing ever came of that.
Not yet.
Apparently, he's, like, hasn't done great investing since that movie came out.
He did something else that...
I think he was in on the GME stuff.
I think he did banking on the complete collapse of civilization.
Yeah,
like, what do you do? Why do you bet on that? Like... How are you going to spend your money if there's no civilization?
Well, he probably is in with aliens.
Yeah.
Ben Mintz.
Oh, yeah.
You love chugging ice into the mic. What hat is that?
It's Blue Oak Barbecue, New Orleans.
Oh, shout out.
Shout out, Blue Oak.
Number one barbecue place in New Orleans?
Yes. Best one in Louisiana. Great people. Give a lot back to the community.
What?
Good friends of the Barstool program.
What is your go-to barbecue order?
Last time I went there, I lushed it up and used my status and got all the meats, all the sides.
Use your status.
Well, Barstool.
That's what we call Barstool
perks.
Barstool perks. Got all the meats, all the sides. Yeah. I ate about 20 or 25% of it, but it was lovely.
So you hoarded them.
Yeah, you're hoarding all the meat.
I hoarded them for sure. But hey, man, they get some run here. So
what is your favorite? Like, okay, let's go around the room. You got one drink, one side, one like main, and a dessert.
At Blue Oak or just in general?
I've never been to Blue Oak, so I was just talking barbecue in general. But
barbecue in general. Well, see, Texas, I've eaten a lot of the Texas barbecue, and man, the Texas brisket is on a level.
Like Austin, Texas?
I've been mainly kind of east of Dallas,
For some reason, I thought Austin was like barbecue capital.
Lockhart, Bob Austin is like where it kind of got started and going. But yeah, I love the Texas brisket. It's my favorite.
So that's your main. What's your go-to side? I think there's only one answer here.
Really?
I think there's only one.
I like It depends. The baked beans can be the best, but I also like mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese.
Yeah,
that
was
my answer.
I'm like, if I do pork, I'll do coleslaw with it, but that's kind of more of a Memphis thing to me.
Like a pulled pork sandwich with coleslaw on top, I would say the coleslaw doesn't count as the side.
Yeah.
It just comes with
it. Yeah, but it's like, good, like the hot cold contrast. Yeah, the contrast is lovely. But,
and then drink, I'm going to assume yours is sweet tea.
Unsweet. I know it is very hard to believe looking at me, but I don't like, I try to avoid sugar and drinks.
Okay. No, that you wouldn't drink a Capri Sun on Lowering the Bar.
Yeah, I'm still blackballed, I think, from Lowering the Bar, by the way. Like, I apologize. I was like, Vibs, you know, don't take it seriously. But like, I asked him, I was like, the other day, I went up to him and I was like, hey, man, you know, I'm sorry about that. I'd love to come on anytime. He's like, oh, yeah, man, whatever. And then.
You never get the tap on the shoulder?
No. And I was sitting right. I mean, he sits right by me.
Damn.
He sits right behind me and you.
I love that. I mean, it's so petty, but the fact that he's playing the politics game because he wouldn't drink a Capri Sun like 7 months ago.
Hey. It is pretty funny.
that's ridiculous. Maybe I'll pull Vibs aside and be like, come on, man.
Yeah, we get along. I mean, we say what's up to each other.
You're in ketosis. You couldn't have a Capri Sun.
I mean, I'm glad you take my side on that.
I was told very early on here by one Dave Portnoy, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do ever. And I think that was like the best thing he ever said. Like, just you never have to do anything you don't want to do. Smitty, what is your go-to barbecue item?
Very well done pulled pork.
Yep.
Is delicious.
Yep.
Especially on a sandwich.
Yep.
I always get the brisket though, and I'm almost always disappointed.
That's why I said Texas brisket. No, brisket can be too dry.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be cooked, done by the right.
When it's
people.
Done great, it's the best.
No,
but
it's the best.
You
90%
quite
of the
literally
time.
Took the words out of my mouth. Yeah. I do pulled pork sandwiches because it's so in New York City, it's so hard to get good brisket, and like bad pulled pork is. Better than bad brisket.
Exactly.
You're just so sad when you get bad brisket.
Exactly.
But
mac
pork,
and cheese.
Mac and cheese go-to side.
And mashed potatoes and beans. Bam.
I want to try supposedly Hometown Barbecue in Brooklyn. We may have to take a field trip out there. I've heard that place is supposed
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, that's
so supposed
to be
super heat.
The go-to in the New York area. I go to a place called Mason Jar. It's down the street from, I don't want to say where I live. It's down the street from me.
No, it's in your neighborhood.
That is decent barbecue.
Yeah, it's good. And then
also, Brazen Fox had a great pulled pork sandwich.
Brazen Fox is closed now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, it had a...
Down where you used to...
No.
It was on like 14th, Brazen Fox.
I used to see somebody down those parts.
No.
Yeah. Was always around the Brazen Fox.
Oh, right. Lived near someone I used to see.
Exactly.
They were neighbors. Yeah.
Exactly.
That was so wild.
Stomping around the old neighborhood.
Yeah, like, we were dating different girls, obviously, but they were like, I think they lived directly next to each other.
Did they know each other?
No.
That's New York. That's like a absolute just
so
example
weird.
Of New York. Yeah. We're all just like packed in here and nobody's
we,
friends.
We did a double
anyone.
Date to Quizzo one
we
time.
We did. We that went was, to the trivia.
Yeah, it was only slightly toxic.
Tavern... 39? No. Taproom 308.
Yeah.
So, God, I don't remember the name of that place.
Yeah.
But no.
I was with someone who just didn't like me. it was wild.
Oh, we've all been there.
Yeah.
We've all been there. I'm trying to. The Hill Country Barbecue is good as well. Hill Country.
Okay.
It's not too far from here, actually, at the office. It's on the west side. It's near the old office in Flatiron.
All right.
So, yeah, there's a couple good barbecue places. Jeff D. Lowe won't eat any of it because he's, you know,
Texas
purist. Yeah. But when I was in Austin...
Jeff D. Lowe, like, this guy, I had to get this off my chest because I...
We're having a grievance. It's the grievance hour on Cracking Ice.
This isn't going to get out there. If I say anything about anything, like Texas, Connecticut, Philly, or down the shore Jersey...
Or Cleveland.
He's a fucking expert.
Or
Penn
State.
Or Penn State. He's an expert.
Yes.
And I'll give him credit. He generally does know what he's talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But last week, like, I'm talking about the Philly Barstool Bar or whatever. He's like, oh, yeah, where is it? I'm like, oh, yeah, it's just in Center City, Philly. Yeah, like, what street? I'm like, Jeff, like, you went to high school in Texas. Like, you grew up in Connecticut. Like, you went down the shore. Like, and I said the street. And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, okay.
Jeff D. Lowe, his fandom is UConn basketball, Cleveland Browns, Cleveland Cavaliers.
Vegas Golden Knights.
And does he like baseball?
Penn State football.
Does he like baseball? Do we know that?
I don't know about baseball. Yeah. I know Penn State football, Cleveland Browns.
He might be Cleveland. It's not Indians now. It's Guardians.
Guardians.
He might be a Cleveland
Guardians
fan.
No, he is. He is.
Yeah. So he's mainly – he's from Connecticut, grew up in Texas, went to college in Pennsylvania and roots for Cleveland sports.
Yes.
But in NHL, he supports Vegas.
Oh, and the Vegas Knights.
And the Vegas Knights.
Oh, he loves Knights.
Yeah.
In his defense, there's no Cleveland NHL team.
But so that's
as good a bandwagon to jump on.
But I'll give it to him. He knows everything about each area.
He does.
He can very quickly.
I mean, he knows everything about every. I mean, he's.
He does.
He's very, very sharp.
Yeah.
He spends more time in the office than anybody.
Correct.
I mean, any human being. He's first here.
Those trivia questions aren't going to write themselves.
No.
How can I fuck over Eric's team today? That's what he sits at his desk doing.
Honkers.
Wait.
Back number one.
Well, this is... It's already... I don't know what time trivia airs or what time this show is going to go up. I'm not going to give it
Nobody's
away.
Nobody's paying attention to anybody.
To the show? Yeah. No, that's true. Or to trivia. This is Cracking Aces, by the way. It's a poker podcast. Poker's kind of... You know, we're in like a lull now.
We got a hell of a guest on here today.
WSOP is over, but we're going to keep the guests going. It's a better time to get guests is the off season because there's not as much poker to be played. So why don't you tell us about our guest
today?
Ben.
Today we got the 2021 World Series of Poker Player of the Year, Josh Aurier, got third in the 2004 main event, which was back when poker really blew up on TV, and that's how he kind of became a household name when Greg Raymer won. David Williams got second. Aurier got third. He's from Atlanta, so I used to see him in Biloxi and playing a lot of South stuff, so we've got a lot of mutual people we know, but I've never actually met Josh. But he finished first, Helmy second, Negreanu third.
By the way, crazy, right?
Yeah.
Smitty was talking about that before the show, and it's like these old school guys, they still got it, and this is just my theory. Most of the new school guys come up just playing No Limit, and so they're just not as good and experienced in mixed games. And if you can beat these mixed games the way that the old school guys do, that's how you win Player of the Year. So pretty impressive.
Because the fields are very much smaller, and you can get consistent points. Limit fields are so big, the variance is tough.
We can talk about this, but what were their odds to finish top three or even Josh winning?
What do you mean odds?
I mean, I've never seen odds on Player of the Year.
You haven't? Wasn't there a fantasy?
They always have that 25K fantasy draft.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
They had that. Josh Aurier, so you get 100 fantasy dollars to draft, I think 100, to draft your team with, and I think Aurier only went for like $5. Which
we'll ask him about that for sure.
The disrespect.
Disrespect, but I mean, there are 100 people that you could put in that top three and we're being like, oh.
Yeah, Helmuth, though. Helmuth, we had him on before WSOP. He was confident. He came out and crushed it.
So was Negreanu.
So Negreanu told us.
Got to give him huge credit for getting top three because he ran really bad the whole time and rallied late.
If you watch his vlogs, he vlogs every day. He ran really, really bad. I know it's such a cop-out in a way to say excuses, blah, blah, blah. Like, facts are facts. He ran very bad in very big spots. He still finished third in Player of the Year. He still had he put up his stats on his Twitter. You know, he had like a million in buy-ins, and he profited $400,000 for the series. Like, pretty good. Like, nonetheless,
it's good.
Like
3 months' work.
Zero bracelets, though. He's still. Funny thing about Negreanu, he never won a bracelet at the Rio.
That is a wild stat.
He won his bracelets. I'm gonna pull it up right now.
First ever game.
Yes.
Like Europe, Australia, or something.
Yeah, so he won his bracelets.
Dean Ears.
All right, this is from Poker News. Daniel Negreanu's most mind-boggling WSOP stat at the Rio. Okay, so I take everything I said back. Negreanu won one bracelet at the Rio in 2008 in the 2K limit hold'em. So he hasn't won a bracelet at the Rio since 2008, and now they're moving to, Paris and Bally's. Right? Paris and Bally's?
Yes.
Yeah, so... Negreanu won a Player of the Year during all that, but only one bracelet. Anybody has five total. So he won Binions, 2008 at the Rio, 2013 at the Crown Casino in Australia, and which was the main event that he won for over $1 million. And then he won in France in WSOP Europe in 2013.
That is wild. The only one at the Rio in 17 years, though, and how much success he's had there.
Yeah, I would say while maintaining like a profit and all of that. Like
I got to give him a ton of credit. Like, he had such a rough World Series and just like played. He played like, 54 events or something?
Yeah, he played
he cashed 18 out of 54, if I remember right.
I think it was less than 54. But yeah, he cashed.
Did he make up what he lost to Polk?
It's a good question. Probably not. But. He did tell us on the show, like, losing all that to Polk like made him study poker harder than he's ever studied before. So
and he did lose the poke, but the games that I was calling, which I think were two of them, he did run pretty bad.
He ran terribly
he ran
in
pretty
those.
Bad in like hot spots.
He ran terribly in those. And then Mattisal had like this, like, you know, your boy Mike Mattisal Smitty. With
I love Mikey.
That you shot a whole documentary with him.
Yeah, we had him on a video that didn't quite make it to editing. And
yeah, that'll come out. When can you release like congressional sealed items? Like 75 years after. Yeah.
Like we're gonna find out what happened to JFK soon.
That'll come out like 50 years from now.
Yeah, Mintz talked to Mikey, and he was like, how's your World Series poker going? And he's like, fucking Sleepy Joe and the vaccine, man. And all right, Mikey.
Yeah, he just went nuts. I said it to Nate, and I was like, well, I've got a video that'll probably get 500,000 views, but I'm not sure if it's what we want. Nate was like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And that was just the end of it.
Juice isn't always worth the squeeze.
Pretty on par with what we got from
Smitty shot a documentary like at his house with him, and he's like, well, we can't use any of that.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive because Barstool's, I mean, we pushed the edge to be consistently not allowed to be on par.
Yeah, we put it this way. If we would have released it, I think it would have been okay, but it just would have made him look not.
Yeah,
verbally. I wasn't looking to like.
It was more to protect him.
Yeah, I wasn't looking to put anybody in a rough situation.
But
that's fair.
If you're listening to this show right now, before you turn on the Dave Portnoy Show to listen to Smitty get into it, I'm going to make a recommendation. You want to guess what that is, Ben?
It's to get your mind right with three cheese.
How did you know? Amazing.
I mean, when you're hot, you're hot.
You are brilliant. You know what 3-Chi is? It is. It's the industry leader in Delta 8 THC products. You go to 3-Chi, the number 3CHI.com to shop for Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, and oils that can be used to make homemade edibles. If you use code ACES, and I would love if you used code ACES at checkout, you get 5% off your order. I just restocked the other day, got in the mail yesterday. I got a pack of root beer taffies of the 8 milligrams, and I got a brownie and a cookie. Those are 50 milligrams each. I eat them over the course of a week. They are brilliantly delicious. You get an amazing buzz and a great body feel, but with a clearer head and less anxiety and paranoia. You have to be 21 to purchase, and it's not CBD. That's the most important thing. It's not just like, I don't want to call CBD fake, but you know, it's fake. This is the real deal. It's the alternative to marijuana, and the best part is it's legal. It's made in the USA with USA-grown hemp. They got a couple new products, like I just mentioned, the Delta 8 Root Beer Taffies. They also have 8 Balls, which 8 milligrams, and disposable vapes. I have finished my vapes that I've been talking about. I need to buy new ones. I didn't realize that I was going to be finished when I did the other order. Whole big thing. The 8 Balls are available in packs of 5 and 25, and the vapes are ready to use right out of the box. What's the website, Ben?
3chi.com, the number 3chi.com. Get your mind right. Helps anxiety, helps sleep. Helps creativity, too.
Yes.
Really helps, you know, kind of keep your mind open, you know? You never know what the world will.
I had a nice night in the hotel last night in New York City. Took some 3-Chi. Had the best night's sleep I've had in 6 months.
Stayed up here for Black Friday.
Oh, because we did the telethon.
Hey, yes. Shout out to everyone.
Fuck everyone.
Christ. What, you think I'm going to, like, lose my marriage here?
That was, like, really sad. You're like, spent the night in a hotel.
In New York City last night in a hotel. And a great night's sleep. Not having to wake up. Thanks to 3-Chi.
Use code ACES at checkout for 5% off your order. It is tried and true. It's the real deal. Robbie Fox always told me to get it. And I was like, Robbie, I've done the CBD. It just doesn't do it for me. I feel no effect. He's like, I'm telling you, this is not CBD. It's perfect alternative to weed. And he was 100% right. And I apologize profusely for doubting him. Give it a shot. I'm going to recommend the brownie and the cookie if you just want something to start off with. Also, the gummies. Like, the gummies are simple. I take about, you know, one-third of a 25-milligram gummy, and it makes me feel right. 3-Chi, the number 3CHI.com. Use that code ACES. Let us know what you think. So, it was pretty good WSOP for the old school guys, and we have one on the line right now. He won Player of the Year this year. I think he was a little stunned that he won Player of the Year. He wasn't gunning for it, but he ran well at the beginning, won two bracelets this year. the pride of Atlanta, Georgia, Ben Mintz's best friend, Josh Arya.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, it's going to be fun. We're going to we'll ask like a whole – we're going to run the gamut of stuff, but congrats on winning Player of the Year. It was fun to follow for sure.
I appreciate it, man. It was a lot of fun to – it's been a lot of fun to look back, and I'm just – I just got my my printout to see how many events I played, and, like, it was a hell of a run. It's like I didn't realize it until – it's just weird. When you're in the moment, you just don't realize what's going on.
When did you start realizing, like, oh, shit, I got a chance?
I don't know.
When it was over?
When you're running good and you're just enjoying playing, you just go sit down and play and just, you know, I guess it's just the old in the zone is just the most vanilla way to put it, I guess.
Yeah, like you won a bracelet on October 20th in the 1500 PLO 8, and then you take a sixth on Halloween in the 50K, and then you follow that up 3 days later, with another bracelet in the 10K PLO high low. So is that about where you were thinking, like, whoa, first, I should gun for it, like not take days off? Was that like a thought that crossed your mind? Did you adjust your schedule in any way?
I mean, when you see your name start going up the leaderboard and then people start talking about the player of the year, like at the beginning of the World Series every year, I go there thinking, yeah, it'd be cool to have a chance to get player of the year or whatever, but it's never like a real goal. But when you get like to the top of the leaderboard, I'm just like, screw it, man. I mean, this is the one chance I'll ever have to get this. And I was having fun playing and I'm running good and thoughts are flowing freely. So yeah, after I won my second bracelet, I then realized, shit, I have to play these stupid online events now too. And so I went and played the online Sunday event. After I think I won on Friday, and then Sunday I'm sitting in my hotel room playing online for 12 hours and finished fourth there, which actually was that leaped Jake and put me in first for the first time, and I was like, holy shit, I have a chance.
Yeah, so it was a four-way battle till the end. Maybe Jake Schwartz fell off a little bit, but he was in contention for a large part of the series between you, Negreanu, and Helmuth. How cool is that? You guys have played countless hours together, like infinite amount of hours together. You know, you're part of the old school crew and just still crushing it. Was that kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Validating?
Gratifying, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It's really cool now, like at the end, having Phil and Daniel's name up there, just because for all like my non-poker people, they know those two guys, so it's like, hey, look who I beat, you know. it's more validating to them. But the whole list of guys that are up top are just first class players. The person that I was definitely the most worried about was Sean Deeb. Just because he puts in such a huge volume and he's so good that at any point you know, he's going to pick up points and then run to another tournament and pick up more points. So I feel like Sean Deeb was the person that I was most worried about. And then all of a sudden, here comes Daniel and Phil just roaring up the leaderboard. Daniel, like, back-to-back third places, and he's there. And then Phil's there. I mean, it was pretty crazy. And then the World Series of Poker comes out and announces me as Player of the Year. Oh, but wait a minute, if Ben Yu wins this tournament, he will be Player of the Year. I mean, it was a shit show, and it was definitely a lot of fun to be involved in, instead of, you know, usually on the other side there's been a few accounting errors in the past, and I was on the sidelines watching the shit show happen because they miscalculated, or there was one year where somebody found that somebody got points added to their total twice, and it's It definitely, the player of the year system definitely needs some work.
Yeah, well, it worked for you this year, so maybe, maybe not.
Don't change anything, guys.
Yeah. Did you? I mean, obviously, the notoriety winning World Series of Poker Player of the Year is what you're going for, I'm sure. But did you get any money, or was there any other kind of awards?
Apparently, there's a $15,000 award from somebody, but my phone has not rung. So, if you guys owe me $15,000 and you're listening, call me.
And you get that big ass banner.
I do. I get a banner forever, which is pretty cool. Like, that was, like, when I – so I had left, and I left the World Series when I was in first, and I had some shit I had to deal with at home. But, like, I was explaining it to my daughter when I got home, and I was like, if I win, I will have a banner raised in, like, in the rafters at the World Series forever.
Yeah.
And so my daughter was like, what are you doing here? You need to go back and you need to win. And ended up that the point total that I had at the time wouldn't have been enough. But, like, it would have been totally different because the butterfly effect of me being there changes everything. But it ended up that I needed the extra points that I got at the PLO final table where I came, I think, seventh, I don't remember, maybe fifth, shit, I don't remember. No, it had to be fifth. And you know what? I don't even remember.
You finished seventh in the 50K.
It was seventh. The points that I got for that and the points that I got for the turbo were what made it possible for me to win. And it was a lot of fun. Yeah,
let's go back to the beginning of your career. Your first ever cash on Hendon Mob is a little thing called a first place finish in the 3K limit hold'em in 1999. That's really cool. I don't know how many people's first registered cash is a bracelet. So that's really, really, really sweet. How did you get into poker? You're from Atlanta. Did you grind underground games down there? I don't know a ton about, like, your gambling background. Ben Mintz was saying that you have, like, just like a cool, just like, you know, gambling.
He was a big pool. He was bad. Like, he's a beast pool, like, player.
I fascinate me with stories of the underground scene in Atlanta.
Yeah. So, I guess I started gambling when I was like 12 years old or something like that. A bunch of guys that I hung out with in high school would always spend the night at one guy's house, and he had a pool table, and I ended up losing, like, clothes off my back, and I had a nice wallet, and I lost that. And so
at 12 years old?
At 12 years old, yeah. And I just got a liking to gambling, and there was a pool hall about a mile from my house, and so I would walk there and play pool for a couple dollars a game. As I got older, I think, like, I gambled a lot playing pool, and I think when I was about 17 or 18, the bartender at the pool hall, when the pool hall would close, he would deal poker, and everybody would pull up bar stools around a pool table and play poker. And I just noticed something. I don't know what it was, but it seemed easy to me. It was crazy to me how these guys that would not gamble on anything but a sure thing playing pool, they were just losing all their money every single time we played poker. And I lost my fair share, but I understood it and started finding home games around Atlanta. And then eventually, like, every time I'd get my bankroll up to like $1,000 or $2,000, I'd get in my car and I'd drive down to Biloxi, and I would play with the people that at the time I looked at these as like huge world-class players. I went broke down there a lot of times, but eventually I would learn, and I would try not to go broke the same way twice. And just the feeling of going broke and driving 400 miles back home just really set in. And, you know, that's where I just, like, cut my teeth playing cards, was down in Biloxi, Mississippi.
Yeah, the old school coast used to be back in the day. Tunica and Biloxi were huge because you had Vegas, you had Atlantic City, but all these other states, you know, now you have Florida and Oklahoma and everybody's got, you know, action. But back then, Mississippi used to be monstrous. I mean, I know that the old school Biloxi stuff.
Tunica. Yeah, Tunica and Biloxi, I mean, the poker rooms would be packed on all the weekends. There wouldn't be an empty table in the whole casino, and people would come from all around. Like, it was before there was poker. Even poker was illegal in Texas.
Yeah.
So people were coming to Mississippi all the way from Texas, from Georgia, from Kentucky. And it was just a hotbed for poker. And I was lucky to be around, like, pre-boom. And as the poker boom happened, you know,
you were already
was
good.
A little more experienced. Yeah, I wouldn't call it good, but I would say good versus the average.
Yeah.
You know, versus what the average player was at the time. But I've always been a gambler, and
So-called real job, no cubicle, no sales job, just always been playing cards, gambling, etc.
It was a job was always just a second thing for me, just for when I went broke. I mean, I've had a million little jobs, but just long enough to get a paycheck and get back in action.
What were some of those?
I would always deliver stuff. You know, I was always a delivery driver, or I would
sell pasta.
Driving Knish's truck for real life here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I guess the last job I had was in 98, I was a courier at a law firm. That was like the only halfway full-time job that I had.
Were you serving people?
At the same time, I was, excuse me?
You were serving people?
No, I was just delivering legal papers. It was before the internet when when you had to drive like legal papers and filings to the court in person and not online.
Damn internet, taking jobs.
You know, even when I had that job, I was dealing poker a couple nights a week, and I was playing a couple nights a week. So my slate was full, but I was making, you know, good money at the time, but also, you know, grooming myself to, I guess, be a professional poker player, I guess.
I'm curious, because obviously you crushed the PLOA, but you're known for playing a lot of different games. How did you learn how to play mixed games and all the different games well?
I don't know. Just trial and error, I guess. Just when I was coming up, you know, No Limit wasn't a thing. Like, No Limit didn't get popular until Chris Moneymaker. I mean, it was... Yes, the main event was always No Limit, but people weren't good at it. I wasn't good at it. I came up playing Limit Hold'em, and then Omaha 8 or Better was a big thing, and Pot Limit Omaha was a big thing. So I just always I liked playing the higher limit games, and the higher limit games have always been, and still are to this day, just a mix. You know, playing mixed games.
Yeah.
Well, so then I remember, I mean, you mentioned the Moneymaker thing. I mean, when you got third in the main event in 2004, that was one of the most watched main events of all time. I remember watching it in the frat house when I was getting into poker in college. And your persona on that main was awesome. Like, you gave off like a good, like, cocky, confident, swaggery edge that was kind of unforgettable, to
be
honest.
It was a cool final table.
Yeah,
like David Williams and Josh. And I'm going to say, Dan Harrington, kind of a badass.
Yeah. Yeah, Dan's an OG. You know, for me, I come from just my background is I'm a big competitor. No matter what we do, no matter what we play for, I want to beat you.
Yeah.
And I think that I brought that mentality to poker before it was the norm. You know, people are like, oh, you beat me out of my money. Oh, let me shake your hand and tell you good game. And I hope you win all the money. But, like, for me, no, it's you beat me, you know, screw off. You're not going to pay my bills. I really want to win the money. And so there's a mixture of just a cocky competitor that – I'm used to winning. I don't like losing. I'm a sore loser, and no matter what I do, you know, if I'm playing board games with my kids, or if I'm, you know, playing quarters at a bar, I mean, I'm a sore loser. You know, as I've gotten older, I've gotten a little better, but at the time in 2004, I'm playing for my life.
I love that.
How old were you at that point? Like 26, 27?
I think I was 29.
Okay, 29.
But, you know, at that time, I was 29. But, you know, outside a short period of my life, like in 99 when I won that tournament, I won like 200,000. Well, about a month later, I was back at CarMax, you know, trying to sell the new car that I bought after I won the money because I went broke.
Damn.
So outside of like a couple months of my life, at that point, I'd never had a $50,000 bankroll to say. So now, I mean, I'm playing, I'm looking at $5 million up top, and there's a lot of pressure, a lot of adrenaline. The competitor comes out in me. I gave them the footage to make me look as bad as possible. But, you know, I look back, I actually watched it with my girlfriend. She'd never seen it. And she's like, holy shit, that's you. I mean, it was like, I'm watching it and I look like a fucking dick. I mean, some of the stuff that I do, like, I can't believe. But yeah, I mean,
do you get more mad at that, or not mad, but, or do you watch how, you know, you played No Limit in 2004 and just get mad at yourself because you're like, holy shit, why was I playing like that in 2000?
That's bad. Yeah. I know. No, I mean, I don't get mad at that at all because back in 2004, there wasn't all the, you know, you had to learn your own way. And if you were lucky enough to have really talented people around you, you can pick up some things that they do or try to remember, you know, learn from conversations that you have with them. But basically, I was on my own learning. I didn't have this group of people to bounce thoughts off of. And I couldn't turn on the computer and watch some genius, you know, play perfect.
Yeah.
So I would love to go back in time with the knowledge that I have now, but do I get mad at the way that I acted? No, I was just a kid from the pool room trying to get my own.
That's fucking awesome.
And I've grown up since then. So no, I wouldn't act that way now because I'll never be in what I look at as a life-changing situation, whether like it's, I look at it as almost like do or die. And one thing that I think about all the time is I remember an interview with, y'all remember he was a tight end or wide receiver, like Kellen Winslow or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's had a few, you talking about the dad or the son?
Oh, yeah, Junior's in prison.
The son, like, took somebody out in a game on a dirty hit or whatever, and he explains to the people that, like, I'm a warrior.
Yeah,
he's a soldier.
A soldier. He said he was a soldier. I remember
soldier,
that.
Yeah. So, and it's like, I kind of look at it, back then, I look at it that way. You know, we're battling for a huge amount of money. If I can get you off your game somehow, I'm going to do it.
I appreciate that so much about poker players who have that mentality. We talked to the other co-host of the show who's not here, Jake Toole, about it. Like, I read somebody's tweet. He just finished 67th or whatever in the main, and there was about 100 left, and someone tweeted, like, the players are being so, like, kind and buddy-buddy with each other, and I just sat there, like, if I know Jake, he is not being buddy-buddy with these people. Like, he's there to win. He doesn't care about these people's feelings. Like, he's there to win this tournament. So I love when people have that same mentality.
I have a question. So you said you never had a roll over 50K before the main. Did you just fire 10K at it with, like, 30 or 40K to your name?
Well, I was getting staked. Okay. 2004. Yeah.
Be cooler if you didn't get staked.
I know. It was no, but when I won in 99, when I put up 3,000 for the tournament that I won, I literally had like an $8,000 bankroll.
I love that.
And I went to Vegas with like 10,000. The first night in Vegas, there's a 20-40 Hold'em game, and like Scotty Wynn and Mike Mattisau are playing, and I was like, wow, dude, these guys are the fucking, they're the guys. I'm going to sit down. I waited like 4 hours on a waiting list to get in this game, and I blew like $2,000 of my $10,000 bankroll, and thought that, I mean, back then, if I had, I was 24 years old and had $10,000, like I'm thinking that I'm never going to go broke. This money is going to last me forever. I can win playing cards whenever I want. And then, but yeah, so I put up 3,000 of 8,000 and end up winning the tournament.
Wow. That's crazy. And then you were broke a month or two later.
And then I was, yeah, then I'm back. I was, when I came home, I flew home from Vegas with a duffel bag with 200,000 in it, went straight to the Ford dealership and bought a Mustang Cobra. And 2 weeks later, I'm at CarMax to see what they'll give me for my money. not one of my shining moments.
No, but that's a good one. That's certainly a good one to learn off of. So when you get third, how much did your life change just off the visibility of getting third in that 04 main event when literally poker was exploding?
It was so much fun. I mean, I'd never had cameras in my face, and I'd never had, you know, people on the rail watching. It was a huge adrenaline rush. I still remember it very vividly, and I remember we were in this like closet kind of thing, like before they were announcing, when they were introducing us for the final table, we're all waiting one by one to come out of this closet, and Matt Savage was the tournament director at the time, and I'm just like bouncing up and down with adrenaline, like I'm about to play the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And Matt's like, Josh, you got to calm down. You're too hyped. And I was like, man, this is the fucking main event final table. What do you expect me? I mean, what do you expect? So it's great memories. It would be awesome to experience again. You know, this later, you know, 20 something years later, obviously, for the money and for the recognition and for my resume, but just to feel it now after grinding for 20 plus years, it would be a real treat to experience it again.
That has to just be incredibly gratifying, though. Just 17 years ago, getting third in the main, and now you're, you know, in your mid-40s, just win the World Series Player of the Year. It's pretty,
yeah,
pretty damn.
It is. It's different for me this year. Like back in August, I took a job with Pocket Fives, and I started to transition, you know, my focus to the business side of poker from playing. But I think that like along with that, and along with getting my personal life straight and really, just being happy has just played an incredible, I mean, it's been the main thing that I look at as the reason why I was successful this year. I don't study. I'm not in the lab.
Really?
I'm not talking about poker. I'm not living poker. I got to play with a clear head without worrying about anything. And, it helped me, I guess.
Okay, go ahead.
I opened up Twitter to a couple questions, and then I have a question, and it's about just outside of poker gambling. I'll start with mine. I remember about 5 years ago at this point, the lottery got up to $1 billion, and you ran like this ginormous lottery ticket pool with a bunch of poker players. And if I recall correctly, you were one number away on one of the lines on one of the tickets. And we're talking,
it was
how
so
much? $30,000 worth
was,
of tickets more? Like what?
It was, yeah, I think so. I own a pool room, and the reason I do it is because I can make a phone call to whoever's working at the pool room, and they can run all the tickets, and then I can just do a bank transfer into the pool room account and pay it off. And also I make like 4% off the lottery ticket sales. But so we pooled together like $35,000, and we get all the tickets, And back then, they didn't have jackpot only. So I'm like in my room at my house, circling the Powerballs and putting them in a pile. Well, I came across one ticket. And so the way I would sweat is I would cover it. When I knew that the Powerball was there, I would cover it and go from left to right. And we had the Powerball. We had the first four numbers. And then the fifth number was like, let's say the fifth number was 65. Well, I peel a six. So now we're like 10% to hit this $1.2 billion lottery. And it ended up being like we had – it was like 68 and we needed 65 or something. But that was a freaking fun sweat. I mean, it was – like, talk about your heart racing.
I always just remember the picture.
$1 billion lottery.
Just the picture of the stack of I'm going to have to try to find it now. Yeah. I don't know if you have it offhand, yeah. But I need to see it again. It must have been the size of, I don't know, the Empire State Building. It was the biggest stack of lottery tickets.
I mean,
tickets.
It was, yeah, I put, like, I remember I put, like, a deck of cards next to it to give it, like, for size. And I think that it was, I mean, it was probably as tall with each ticket has like 10 numbers on it, I think. And I think it was like as tall as like a 2-liter Coke bottle or something. Those. And I've done that a couple times, but the last time I did it ended it for me because one of the guys in the chat, so we bought like $30,000 worth of tickets again. Well, one guy in the chat accused me, you know who it was? It was Sean Perry.
Ooh.
He accused me of stealing the money and voiding out the tickets or something. And then he offered like to bet $20,000 that he could prove that I didn't buy the tickets. And then we took the bet and then he backed out. And yeah, it was a nightmare and it wasn't worth it. And so I'll never do that again.
Okay, my question was going to be, and you don't have to, I'm not trying to dive into your personal life, but you mentioned just being happier and how that helped you play better. Is there anything you changed in your life that you can share that kind of led to the mindset change?
Yeah, I got divorced earlier this year. I was separated for a couple years, so the divorce was really rough. But the marriage was worse for a long time, and finally had the nerve to get up and do something about it. And, you know, doing so, I've built relationships with my two daughters that I've never had before. I have amazing relationships with my daughter. Now I have my girlfriend in my life, and she's like my best friend, and we really have a great time together. And it's really, you know, people, my friends that I've known for a long time, they just tell me, like, Josh, you're just happy now, you're just different, and I can tell, like, life is just easy, and I get to spend it with my best friend every day, and I talk to my daughters every day, and life is just, it's just different from, you know, being an unhappy dad. Just, you know, I can't wait to go play poker just to escape life, where I went into this World Series not even caring what happened, just because life was good. And you know, we looked forward to being able to be out in Vegas for a month straight and enjoying the luxuries of Vegas. But, you know, other than that, it's...
That's awesome.
Love the grateful.
Good, even without winning.
Love the grateful attitude.
And you can't really win at poker when you have something in your mind.
Yeah.
Like,
sticks. Yeah, no, it was... I was in a pretty bad headspace for a long time, but it getting my life, getting shit straight really freed me up mentally.
I want to ask you more about Pocket Fives because, I mean, I remember PocketFives.com being like the big online tournament authority back when, before Black Friday, when online was at its heyday. I remember I almost cracked the top 100 once, you know, watch out, boys. But, you know, talk about you getting involved with that. What's going on there? Because it's a huge poker community, and I know a lot of people that are a part of it.
Yeah, we're so back in August, I met with a couple guys that they were interested in hiring me to run the staking platform. It's new to Pocket Fives. It's like crowdfunding, you know, where you get to – we post ads for players that are looking to engage with their fans and looking to also play tournaments that they wouldn't be able to afford on their own. So I've been head of the staking, I guess, division, and it's been a great hit. Like I had 10 people invest $15. I put 10% of my first bracelet win on there, and 10 people turned $15 into $2,000.
Oh, wow.
Daniel Negreanu put almost all of his events up there for the whole series. We had some Eric Seidel events. We had some Phil Hellmuth events, David Williams, Matt Glantz, Daniel Weinmann. I think that it's important for the growth of poker even more than it is now. I use this stupid analogy every single time, but it's perfect. NFL wouldn't be where it's at without gambling. And you can watch an NFL game and not have any action and it's boring and you fall asleep, but bet $10 on one of the sides and it is so much fun to watch. And that's what we're trying to bring to poker. If you have a favorite player and they're in a tournament, yeah, you might check back in the morning to see how they did, to see their chip counts, to see if they made the final table. But if you have $10 invested or 20 or even more, you're going to be clicking refresh all the time to get every single update.
That's dope, yeah.
And I know I did it. I actually bought pieces of people through the site to, because I love the action. I love sweating updates. I love the rush of, the poker runs are exciting. I like the fact that I can bring that aspect to poker fans.
It sounds like a great way to connect the players with the fans too.
For sure.
That's what's so important.
Yeah, there was a couple packages that I know that I had over 100 people invest in a couple different tournaments. I know Jonathan Little had over 500 people invest in one of his tournaments. Daniel Negreanu had basically 300 people or more invest in almost every single one of his events. It's great. I mean, it's a great way to engage your fans and to allow your fans. It's not just for, like, the World Series of Poker is expensive. And everybody can't afford to go put up $1,500 every day in an event, or $10,000, and now they have $50,000 events and $100,000 events. What about the little guy that wants to enjoy the fun? So that's what we're able to do. I mean, you can invest $5 in Daniel Negreanu and enjoy every bit of his run. So it's for everybody, and I hope that we can grow it even more than it did for this World Series.
Yeah, definitely going to try to play more than, a couple events in this coming up World Series. I guess that makes sense. It's about 6 months away.
I know. It's cool. It's only 6 months away.
I'm stoked about that. Definitely going to try to play a few of those low buy-in, no limit hold'em events, and we'll check into Pocket Fives and maybe.
Yeah, you got to put let your followers on for the ride, man.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. That would be a lot of fun.
Had you ever played with George Holmes in Atlanta before? No, he's Atlanta.
No, I haven't. I know one of his friends, and I reached out because there's a guy that plays in that home game that I know pretty well. And I reached out before the final table. This is what's so cool about George Holmes. I reached out before the final table and told him, if you want some of the best coaching, I can connect you. I mean, and I wasn't talking about me. I'm not trying to coach anybody. But there's teams of people that coach final table participants every year. And I could have set him up with Sean and Johnny Bax. But he was like, no, you know what? I've just gone with the feel. I'm a feel player, and I don't want to fuck up my mojo. So, he went with it. And hats off to him. I mean, he knows what the best, one of the best things about my poker game is that I know what I'm good at, but even better, I know what I'm bad at. So it's like, I know what I bring to the table, and I'm going to do the best of my ability. And George Holmes did the exact same thing. It's like, he knew what he was good at, and he really took the ball and ran with it. And, you know, more power to him.
He was a blast to watch, like, just amazing television.
It was pretty cool. I could see a lot of people running to poker again because, you know, somebody like George Holmes that brings different aspects to the table other than, you know, your GTO solver stuff, that, you know, there's different ways to skin a cat. You know, there's not just one way to win playing poker. And George Holmes proved that you don't have to study solvers 6 hours a day to succeed at poker.
Amen, brother. We will we'll let you go in a minute here. Just there's one final question from a listener. He just wants to know what kind of gambling games you do when you play golf. I just thought that was a fun question.
He's golfer Josh and his Twitter, well, so there's got to be something to this.
We do, man, literally all sorts of stuff. We usually, the main game we play is we always have partner games, and it's weird that, like, the same guys always end up being partners. So it's almost like every time we're out there is a grudge match. And we play, like, a trash game where, let's say, we play $100 a hole, but then birdies are 100, greenies are 50, up and down from the bunker is 50. We do really dumb stuff called pollies. If you make a putt longer than the flagstick, it's another piece of trash for 50. And then there's double pollies. So that's two flagsticks. We have an anaconda. If you make a 50-foot putt or longer, that's like worth four pieces of trash. I mean, we do some dumb stuff. But yeah, we play by the hole. We don't do the Nassaws. We used to play Wolf, but when you play Wolf, you can go out there and play really good and lose your ass. And, we do a rakes and snakes and something else where if you three putt, if you're the last person to three putt, you lose to everybody.
So it gets big.
We just have, it gets stupid. And
do you play with Smoltz?
I play with Smoltz. We're members at the same club. I haven't played that much in the last couple of years, but I always say that I plan on playing more, but the game kind of got messed up. But yeah, I mean, that happens. It goes in cycles. It's just like poker games. They come and go. Golf games come and go. But golf is just a great thing to, you know, you're outside, you're not on the couch, you're not sitting at a desk, and get to hang out with your boys and gamble. And
yeah,
it's one of my favorite activities to, and I get to let my competitive spirits or whatever.
All right, Josh, well, thank you so much for your time. Very generous with it. Congrats on the incredible World Series, and congrats on your happiness and you know, your new outlook on life. And hopefully we will be able to link, all three of us, four of us, sorry, we'll be able to link up in person, you know, if not sooner, but definitely at the World Series in July or June, May.
Absolutely, man. I look forward to it.
All right, see ya.
I'll see you down south at some point.
You'll see him.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Anytime.
Josh Arie, 2021 World Series of Poker Player of the Year. That's just like the full circle, though. The third in the 04 main to bookend it with the 2021 Player of the Year is, I don't know, that just, something about that story is.
Yeah, I love it. Like, pool hall, gambler, poker player, crushes.
I love the fact that he finally had a clear mind and went in this year basically not caring whether he wanted to win or lose or not. And he ended up fucking winning.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
It's pretty cool how it works out like that. And it is important because you see it in poker all the time. Poker players all the time will crash and burn, lose their entire bankroll, et cetera, et cetera. Which he obviously had, you know, he talked about, had done multiple times in the past. But clear mind, confidence, knowing that, like, you just feel good about yourself and the game goes a long way in poker, the mental edge that you can get.
I also like what he said, like the thing about the solvers and stuff, because It is tough with all that. He mentioned it. I mean, all the data that's out there and how you can study. But to bring new blood into the game, we need guys like George Holmes. And
Because
so often I feel like when poker's like trying to appeal to a broader spectrum, when like casual people hear all this like high-end stuff, it scares them because they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And so I love here, you know, the feel stuff. Yeah. And I think that's good for poker for it not to be. I mean, I know the analytics are always going to be important. I'm not blowing it off. I think that that's important. But I think it kind of scares new players away sometimes.
Oh, of course.
And I think when George Holmes comes in there and it's like, I don't give a shit about what anything is. I'm shoving everybody around in the main.
You can't analyze, you can't analyze a wild card.
Yeah.
Like that.
But just in general, you know, for the future of poker, it's all about bringing new blood in. And sometimes I think the technology and analytics kind of goes against it sometimes.
Of course.
So thanks again to Josh. I was going to run through some DMs that we took on Instagram. If you sent one, thank you. But, you know, we don't want to go too long. So we'll save those. Maybe we'll do an episode on Thursday. I don't know. Maybe. But this is episode what, Mintz? Do you know it?
I think 112.
Nah, 113. Damn. 113.
Close.
We're on a bit of a roll with episodes. I think we've kind of been crushing it. You know, the Jake episode, or the episode before that when you guys just called me an asshole for 3 hours was great. Then Jake's 67th place finish.
Rhett Wiseman was good too.
And then, yeah. And then we did the bonus episode with Jeff Platt. And then we had Rhett Wiseman, professional baseball player who went deep in the main last week. So if you missed any of those,
that was also a therapy session
which I guess is just what the podcast is now as well. We do 10 minutes of therapy and then we get into poker, which probably we need. But yeah, awesome episode. You know, Josh is a legend. You know, very, very cool to hear like his background and now just everything.
Fun personality too. Yeah. Just engaging. Yeah. You know, you can't not respect someone that just comes on and tells that story of the CarMax thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just like puts 3K of his 8K up, ships a bracelet for 200K, buys a freaking Mustang, and then
a month later,
he's at CarMax trying to put me. You want to talk about down bad? Can you imagine the mindset of going from like no money to 200K broke? Like,
can you imagine?
Yeah, can't imagine.
Can you imagine that?
Who said it? It was like Nick the Greek or somebody who said, or somebody advising Nick the Greek, that you're going to be up and down, rich and broke 7 times in your life. It just matters which one is the last.
Yeah, more or less, yeah. I mean, a lot of these top crushers, like DeGrom, who always talks about, he would crush the Toronto games, go to Vegas, lose everything in Vegas, go back to Toronto, get staked, crush the Toronto games, go back to Vegas. I think he did that, you know, 10 times. Yeah.
So. Well, it's like these high-end, the best guys.
They've got that edge
where what makes them elite is the fact that they aren't scared. Yeah. And you look at the 04 main, I mean, he was just talking about how he was playing for his life. I think what made him unforgettable in my mind was that cocky heel character he was. Yeah. He was that like young prick kid that was the pool hall hustler that was just needling everybody on TV. And I don't know, something about it was just gravitating.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, and I don't know. I'm just glad that he came on the show and it was cool. Him sharing that stuff about his personal life.
Everybody listening, if you could just smash the 5-star review, subscribe if you're not subscribed. We have merch in the store. Yeah, I'm going to do that after. Sorry. Yeah, I just pulled it up.
I was just reminding.
I'm going to toss it in.
And thank you to the millions of people worldwide that bought our new Barstool Poker merch. We really appreciate it, y'all.
Was it billions? Oh, I didn't know we cracked the billy. Okay, yeah, I knew it was millions.
Appreciate you guys.
So we'll hop out of here. Again, thanks everybody who listens. Cracking Aces, that's Smitty, that's Ben Mintz, I'm Eric Nathan, Jake Toole has a fever, so he's not here today. Take us home, Smitty.
Get well, Jake.
He's probably just faking it.